This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
The aid that we have given Israel allowed Israel to defend itself against 200 ballistic missiles that were just meant to attack the Israelis and the people of Israel. And when we think about the threat that Hamas, Hezbollah presents, Iran, I think that it is, without any question, our imperative to do what we can to allow Israel to defend itself against those kinds of attacks. Now, the work that we do diplomatically with the leadership of Israel is an ongoing pursuit around making clear our principles, which include the need for humanitarian aid, the need for this war to end, the need for a deal to be done which would release the hostages and create a ceasefire. And we're not going to stop in terms of putting that pressure.
So Kamala Harris wants a ceasefire, and she's trying to claim that she understands exactly how this Middle Eastern conflict actually is, how it came to existence and what it is right now. It is important to remember, and she articulated it there, that there are still hostages. There's still four American hostages, as I understand it, that were taken a year ago. They've been held for a year. She's saying that they're doing what they can to try to bring this conflict to the conclusion of a ceasefire. And I have to ask, is it even possible to pressure Israel to come to the conclusion where a ceasefire would actually end up happening? Yes, Israel seems to be launching attacks against their enemies, but they seem to be retaliatory perpetually. Let's get to somebody who really knows what they're talking about when it comes to this conflict. Our friend, Lieutenant Colonel Dakota Wood, back with us once again. We're excited to have you back. Dakota, thank you for being with us here today. A very solemn day as we remember the 1 year marking of the terrible, horrific attacks in Israel on October 7th.
Yeah, I mean, these anniversaries are just tragic reminders. Everything that you were saying and implying, that you have to have a day thinking back a year where 1,200 people just weren't murdered, but tortured, burned, baked in ovens, brutally raped, decapitated. I mean, it was just absolutely horrific. And 250 or so taken hostage, many of those killed, some of them rescued, and still around 100 plus or minus a few, they're still being held. So in terms of the leading question you had about a negotiated settlement or ceasefire, it isn't going to happen. So long as Hamas, Hezbollah, and Iran pledge the destruction, right, the absolute elimination of the state of Israel, what else can Israel do? I mean, how do you stop fighting in your end when even Hamas, as decimated as it's become, on today, that one-year anniversary, launched additional attacks from the Gaza Strip? I mean, how do you deal with that kind of world? And I think the Israelis are really doing the only thing that they can do for the foreseeable future.
So we're speaking with Lieutenant Colonel Dakota Wood. What did Israel do leading up to October 7th to provoke this type of attack from Hamas? Like, what led into that horrific attack to cause that to have to be part of the existence over there in the Middle East?
I'm being sarcastic here, but they showed reasonableness and patience and tolerance. I mean, they withdrew from the Gaza Strip in 2005, so almost 20 years ago. It's been under the full governance of some form of Palestinian authority. Hamas grabbed power in the Gaza Strip by brutally attacking, using violence against its own people, its rival political parties. So after that occurred, Israel still opened the door. Thousands of Gazans had employment in Israel proper, sending about $2 million, I think, a day or so back into the Gaza Strip area. Any of them could participate in the Israeli economy. The same thing for folks from Lebanon, you know, engaging in exchange with Israel. You could be an Arab, a Muslim, a Palestinian in the state of Israel and hold political office, participate in the economy, you know, voting rights as a citizen, all that stuff, right? So there weren't any attacks into southern Lebanon other than in response to attacks from Hezbollah, a daily basis for the past year from southern Lebanon. And they've been fighting kind of a running war with Hezbollah even since 2005, had a big battle in 2006. So Israel has been under assault from all these folks, from Iranian sponsored groups in Syria, for a very long time. And they've tried to accommodate the global community to include pressure from the United States to be reasonable, to be conciliatory, to see to appeasement, and none of their neighbors will abide by those same rules.
So, you know, I think about the attacks that just kind of keep creeping up. We listened to Donald Trump talk about how he eliminated ISIS, but then it comes back. And we had the Taliban at bay, but now it's back in a very aggressive way towards peace and prosperity in that region of the world. What has to be done in order to eliminate it for good? Is it possible to eliminate terrorism from the world for good? And if it's not possible to eliminate it, how do you keep it contained so that they don't have the ability to terrorize the world?
Well, you can't eliminate it, but you create environments that are intolerant of that or of it. And by that, I mean the people that would host the groups that, you know, have the fighters and have this passion for using violence, that those populations have to be intolerant of that kind of nonsense. So where you have a Gazan population.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Palestinians in the West Bank, the Syrians under Bashar al-Assad, the Iranian people, so long as they tolerate or support forms of government and political parties and ideologies from which this kind of violence comes, it's almost impossible for an external actor like Israel or the United States to completely eliminate that. So you mentioned the Islamic State was only beaten back because of American military power. I mean, was there any diplomacy, you know, out of Washington, D.C. or Paris or Berlin that brought Islamic State to the negotiating table and they found some kind of a peaceful way forward? I mean, it didn't happen. You weren't going to negotiate a settlement with Soviet communism or with Nazi Germany or Imperial Japan, you know, in the 1940s. So sometimes the only thing that does work is sheer brutal military power. And you beat your enemy into submission, and I hate to say it that way, but the population gets exhausted, and they finally conclude that this use of violence to achieve a political end is not the way to go about it. So, you know, these discussions have to be two-way, but that means that both parties have to agree that that is the fruitful way forward.
Yeah. So the people who are in opposition, just to be very specific here, sure. Hamas has been the upfront and personal one as of late, but we've seen Hezbollah pushing against Israel and, of course, being funded by Iran. What's their goal? What would satisfy their efforts? How do they know that they've won? It's done. It's over.
Well, yeah, I mean, this chant that you see on college campuses, you know, from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free. That means from the Jordan River all the way west to the Mediterranean Sea, which means the elimination of Israel as a state, as a nation, and that would all revert to pre-1922 Palestinian territory, which ignored, you know, the hundreds and thousands of years before that when the Jews lived there, etc. But what they're looking for is that Israel ceases to exist as a modern state, and that the Palestinians, under whatever leadership, you know, you can remember Yasser Arafat back in the 60s and 70s, right, that would be a Palestinian land, and they would somehow or other live there peacefully because their Jewish enemies would be gone. I mean, that is their desired state, and they have stated that as their formal policy for decades.
So if you're a Jewish person living as a citizen in Israel right now, What happens to you if the goal is attained, if the Hamas goal, if Iran's goal is attained from the river to the sea? How did the Jewish people in Israel fit into that plan?
They would fit into a Palestinian-controlled state, just as Jews fit into Iraq, Syria, maybe Saudi Arabia. There's a handful of Jews that live there and try to observe, you know, their traditions and religion and all that. So in other words, you are an absolute minority with no political power, and you suffer the whims of the majority religious factions around you. So it would be that you are a stateless entity. And keep in mind that when you look at the world map, there are 50 Muslim-majority countries around the world, many of them like 80 or 90% Muslim. There's only one Jewish state, and that's the country of Israel. So if you don't have an Israel, then the Jews just become a displaced people again with no homeland, and they will always be subject to whatever abuses or injustices or minority status that they would have to live in any given country.
Do these terrorist organizations that want the river to the sea goal to be attained, do they want to live peacefully with Jewish people?
No, there is an absolute hatred, and it goes back to the time of Abraham, you know, Isaac and Jacob, right?
Yes.
Where you had the division between the two brothers, right? Yeah. And one becomes the Arab people in general. I mean, we're talking about big swaths, and the other the Jewish people that go up into modern-day Israel. So it goes back centuries, this enmity, and it becomes useful on the Muslim side. And again, I'm painting a very broad brush here, between Sunni and Shia, the militant factions, to use the Jews as kind of a whipping post, right? That everybody can agree to hate the Jews, just like everybody can agree to hate, you know, the United States, because it buttresses your standing within your own domestic community. You know, so you offset this conflict between Shia and Sunni by turning to the left and everybody hates Israel, right? So if you can prove that you can kill more Jews or eliminate the country or hurt the country of Israel, then it increases or enhances your standing and your stature, and you get more support. So, you know, there's a couple, three different lines of argument on that.
We're speaking with Lieutenant Colonel Dakota Wood. You brought up the United States and how they could be considered a pariah in these same sort of circles that hate Israel, of course. We have an election coming up. I think that it's pretty clear that the Kamala Harris approach is very similar, if not exactly the same, as the Joe Biden approach. Mm-hmm. Donald Trump's approach would be much different. It was when he was in office. You would presume that he would take a much different approach when he would take office once again, be inaugurated in January. How quickly is the stage reset if a new administration in the United States of America, an ocean away, is reestablished?
Almost overnight. I mean, think about the revolution that occurred in Iran, and the Iranian revolutionary groups took hostage a number of Americans during the Carter administration. And they held them for a little over a year. And it wasn't until Ronald Reagan was elected to office, the day after he took office, those hostages were released because they knew that Reagan was going to come in and just bomb the heck out of the Ayatollah. The same thing that the Obama administration negotiated freeing up billions and billions of dollars to try to buy a favorable, you know, approach from Iran to somehow truncate its nuclear program. all the reporting is in on that in the negotiations. And to the extent that the JCPOA, you know, the Iran nuke deal, was in place, the Iranians were violating that anyway, you know, continuing to add centrifuges, enrich uranium far in excess of any kind of civilian nuclear program, which was always less than 10%. Now they're at 60%, heading toward 90%. So they were violating it at that time. Any dollar that went into Iran, supposedly for food or medical supplies or whatever, it just freed up an Iranian equivalent of money to send to Hamas or Hezbollah or any other group that wanted as surrogates, you know, to battle Israel or the United States. So this is an Obama administration approach where diplomacy leads with no visible effect, and it incentivizes Iran and its ilk to behave as aggressively as possible, and we just try to buy them off more. Trump comes in, and if you remember, it was a full pressure campaign on Iran, and it boxed them in, right? You put on more sanctions and forbade, you know, the sale of oil and all these other sorts of things. And then the Biden team comes in and tries to resurrect the Obama era, you know, nuclear deal. And so, you know, Iran comes back in full-throated in its support to a terrorist function. So I think that you would see in a Harris administration that same approach, which is repeatedly shown to have failed, incentivizes bad behavior, and it makes the United States look weak. You would see the opposite of that with the Trump administration.
Dakota Wood, thank you so much for the time today. It's an important day. We wanted to mark it by acknowledging what actually took place, because I think that the politics and the tug of war over this issue in an election season definitely makes us forget about some of the truths, the atrocities that took place a year ago. So we thank you for your expertise.
Appreciate that. Thanks for having me on. And thanks for bringing this up. So just a critically important issue.
Yes, I agree. Thank you so much. We'll speak to you again soon.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Right.
Dakota Wood, Lieutenant Colonel Dakota Wood. Grateful to have him back on the show with us. We're going to take a quick break. Wiggins America, when we come back, it's the Monday Roundup, the wildest ride in the wilderness, the Midwest wilderness, that is, downtown St. Louis, basically. Let's take a quick break. Ryan Wiggins in studio with Wiggins America next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.